views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready to experience the truth. Welcome to Truth Talk Radio with your host, Deb Acker. Truth Talk Radio is the hit show that will illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. Unleash your intuitive nature while Deb helps you stop looking outside yourself for value and happiness, break through patterns, and move into your authentic truth at lightning speed. Truth Talk Radio will leave you feeling lighter, help you live with more presence, passion, and clarity, and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Now, here's your host, Deb Acker.
Hello, everyone. I'm Deb Acker, and you are listening to Truth Talk on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with me for the next hour as I help you experience the truth, nothing but the truth. Each month on the first and third Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'll be talking about the most recent energies coming through and interviewing some of the most gifted, inspiring, and unique souls, speakers, and authors, all to help you to move into more light, love, and of course, truth. And before we get started today, I'd like to start out today's show with an intention. And my intention for today's show is that everyone that needs to hear this conversation hears it, and that you leave feeling expansive, inspired, and good enough with new awarenesses and clarity. So with that, I'd like to introduce today's guest, Marissa Peer. Marissa is a world-renowned speaker, rapid transformational therapy trainer, and best-selling author. She has nearly three decades of experience as a therapist and has been named Best British Therapist by Men's Health magazine and featured in Tatler's Guide to Britain's 250 Best Doctors. Marissa uses her experience of treating clients, including rock stars, CEOs, elite Olympic athletes, royalty, and Oscar-winning actors, to inform her life-changing speeches and lectures. She has been voted best speaker at numerous conferences in the Mastermind Group London and the Women in Business Super Conference, Awesomeness Fest 2015, and the Royal Society of Medicine. And in 2015, Marissa launched her Marissa Peer Method School, teaching her unique method for the first time to audiences in London, Canada, the U.S., and Australia. And so with that, I'd like to welcome Marissa to the show. Welcome. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. How are you?
Good, good. I'm so grateful to have you here today. I'm so grateful to be having this conversation. And so before we dive right in, can you share about your story and how you got on this path and the work you're doing?
Yes, I always think it's interesting that you think you're going somewhere and the universe has other plans. So I always wanted to be a child psychologist, but realized very quickly it's quite a tough job, especially when you're young, because you have three patients, mother, father, child, and the one that needs you the most is the one that it's hardest to get access to. So I abandoned that and actually went to Los Angeles and taught aerobics for Jane Fonda, which I loved. But even there, I was very aware, because I had a psychology background, that every third girl in the Jane Fonda studio was either bulimic or anorexic or exercise compulsive. And I was always fascinated by how I could help them too. And so that led me to training with a lovely guy called Gil Boyne. And I trained to be a hypnotherapist, really believing that I'd only work with girls who had bulimia or anorexia. But as it happened, it was so fascinating and so interesting. And I diversified very quickly into people who had every kind of issue. And I loved it. But what I really learned there, and it's been something that I've used throughout my career, is how these women that appear to have everything, models, actresses, head of TV networks, judge themselves entirely by what they weighed and what they looked like. And I realized that they all had this issue of not feeling good enough. And then when I began my hypnotherapy practice, I worked a lot on TV shows and movies, working with actresses. And they would always say to me, because they'd come to my house mostly, oh, you know, I saw that famous model turn up in a limo. Why are they coming to you? I mean, they've got everything. And I said, yeah, but they don't have everything. Because until you know that you're enough, you actually haven't got anything. And so if we look at the Amy Winehouses of the world and the Whitney Houstons and the Philip Seymour Hoffmans, even Robin Williams. We see people who appear to have everything but end up absolutely wretched because they haven't got the one thing they need, which is knowing they matter and that they're good enough just the way they are.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's interesting, right? Because there's such a common pattern of, you know, like you said, it's like, well, we're looking for value and for worth outside of ourselves, right? So it's like you can have everything on the outside, and yet if you don't have that fundamental belief within you, it doesn't matter. So as you started to see these examples, how did you start to, you know, recognize what was needed, and how did you start to, you know, like I was watching your Awesomeness Fest video and I just thought it was really interesting. It's just a really simple process. So how do we begin to feel good enough?
Well, what I noticed is at first I was working with anorexics and bulimics who were either filling themselves with food or denying food to feel enough. Then I began to work with shopaholics and even compulsive shoplifters who also felt that they weren't enough. And I worked with hoarders and I worked with addicts. And I began to realize that they all had the same, if you peel away the layers, they were all dealing, I'm not good enough, so I need to buy loads of stuff or keep loads of stuff or eat loads of stuff or I need to gamble or drink or have lots and lots of different girlfriends or boyfriends in order to feel enough. But of course, feeling enough comes from what you are inside, not what you have in your possession, even what your body is like. So it was actually realizing this with my clients who'd say things like, you know, I binge eat because I feel so empty inside. I buy all this stuff because when I come in the house with 15 carrier bags, I feel momentarily I must be enough, because I've got all of this, or I'm a workaholic because I'm trying to show everyone I'm good enough. I try to punish my body so it's got no fat on it. Then I think men will like me and I'll be enough, or I have all this surgery. And so I was explaining to all of them, look, you can't change an internal belief with an external procedure. You can't have breast implants or liposuction to feel enough when it comes from you. So I began to get them to change the belief and to point out that no baby wakes up and goes, oh my God, look at my fat legs, or oh gosh, you know, I can't quite get this banana in my mouth yet, I'm really inadequate. They have no clue that they're not anything other than wonderful just the way they are, which is why they run up to you with a leaking diaper or a runny nose and still think they're the most gorgeous thing in the world, which of course they are. So I began to show people how to reactivate the thing you're born with. I matter, I'm lovable, I'm good enough. You only have to go to a park or a swimming pool to all the little girls go, Mummy, look at me, Daddy, watch me, Mummy, look at me jump, look at me dive bomb, look at me on the swing. When you go to the park, the 12 or 13 or 14 years, they don't do that anymore. They have a belief that I better not draw attention to myself because I might not be worth it. If I say, look at me, I might mess it up. And so it's really a shame that children are born loaded with self-belief and lose it quite quickly, far too quickly, and change it to what I call performance anxiety or self-consciousness or a fear of being judged. So how I work is all about putting that back, which is not difficult because it's not something you've never had. It's something you had. It kind of diminished, and now you're going to reactivate it.
Yeah, no, I think it's important because, you know, we're trained to try to like fit in. We're trained to, you know, it's like to feel safe, to feel loved by our parents. We tend to just take on their beliefs. We tend to, you know, it's like, okay, I'm just going to buy into whatever it is that they're telling me. And so this return to our truth, which is that we are good enough, right? And we knew that when we were born, because we, like you said, being a baby, it's like, okay, we don't realize we're doing anything wrong, right? It's like, it's the boxes we get placed in as we grow up. And as we watch our parents. And so, you know, what does, as you're starting to integrate this process, like what does that process look like? What is the languaging that, you know, that is being used to start to integrate that?
Well, my process is very simple. It begins with writing that all over your house, writing them enough on your mirrors in lipstick or eyeliner, putting it on your fridge in big fridge magnets, putting it on posters all around the house. In fact, somebody I worked with recently said that she'd had it spray painted on her daughter's pillow, which I thought was a wonderful idea. So she puts her head on at night, this is I'm enough, and it's the last thing she reads and the first thing. You can have it on cushions. I have a little bracelet that has it on. And I have it written all over my house. And people come in, even removal men, even plumbers, even the cable guy, and they'll go, what does that mean? And when I tell them, they go, yeah, I'm going to go home and do that with my kids or help my wife. And I'm a great believer because it's true that what the mind sees all the time, it starts to say yes to. And then when the mind says yes to it, the body says yes to it. You know, so often we're told to say things like, I'm a goddess, I'm a rock star, I'm a perfect 10. And mine goes, come on, you're not a perfect 10. You've got cellulite. You know, you're wearing clothes from Target. You're not a goddess. And then we give it up because we go, no, it's not working. There's too many objections, even though it's you that's objecting. But when you go, I am enough, your mind goes, of course you are. And you always have been, and you always will be. Or never object to something that's fundamentally true. But really saying to yourself, I look like, I don't know, I look like Beyonce, or I'm a perfect 10, or I'm hotter than Beyonce. Your mind will, you object to that yourself because you know it's not really true. But your mind will never reject, object, or even argue with saying, I'm enough.
Well, and what would you say to people that, you know, it's like, obviously, like you said, we have that fundamental conditioning from when we're a baby, but they, when they say that, they don't actually feel it to be true.
Yeah, but that's like everything. The mind, here's a rule of the mind. The mind learns by repetition. You say it, you think it's silly. You say it again, you think it's silly. One of the reasons for putting it on your bathroom mirror where you clean your teeth every day is that you read it, and when you're in the shower, you make a point of saying, I'm enough. And so I have it on my phone alerts. It goes off 8 o'clock every morning and 8 o'clock every night. A lot of my passwords have a combination of those words in it, along with various numbers, so that I'm constantly speaking, writing, reading, or saying, I'm enough. And in doing that, it's so constant that my mind learns it. You know, it's a bit like if you have a desktop and you switch to a laptop, it feels very strange to suddenly not have the big mouse. But then you get so used to it and you forget, you know, when you switch from a BlackBerry to an Apple, or it, all of those operating systems feel a bit unusual. But by a process of repetition, you very quickly forget that you ever did that before. If you have a stick car and you switch to an automatic, very quickly, you've even forgotten how to drive with a stick shift. And I bet no one on here can remember the number of the first cell phone they ever had, even though you gave it out to everyone. You quoted it all the time because we remember what we do constantly. Anything we do a lot becomes familiar. That's why if you play a song on the radio, you know, years and years ago, one of the magazine gave away this free compilation recording, and I put it on. It was a song by Roxy Music, may not even know who they are, and it was a song called Virginia Plain, and I hadn't heard that since I was 17, so really nearly 30 years ago, longer. And as it played, as it finished, my mind waited for the next song on that album I'd had at 17 years old to play, because it wasn't going to play, because it was a compilation of all other people's songs. But my mind remembered the songs on a track from 30 years earlier, because that's what it does. That's why we remember jingles and adverts. And I don't know what the adverts are in America, but in England, you can say certain lines and we'll finish them. Because even we remember adverts from the 60s and the 70s, because the mind stores things in a sequence. And once you start to go, I'm enough, I'm enough, I'm enough, it will always finish that for you all the time without any effort from you at all.
Yeah, so it starts to get programmed in. Well, and there's like a few directions I want to go, but one of them is so, you know, you're talking about the mind. What role do emotions playing in us feeling good enough?
Well, here's a great rule of the mind. Emotions will always defeat logic every day of the week. In a battle of the mind, logic will never win, emotional wins. When you say to someone who's upset, come on, cheer up, or you say to someone who's sad, let's go watch a funny film, or let's eat cake, or let's go out, it's like trying to make depressed people go shopping and have a massage. that logical stuff does not work because the emotion will defeat logic. All you can ever do is find a better emotion, a stronger emotion, and that does work. So that's why I find so many logical therapies don't work, because the emotion will always beat you because it's stronger. But if you use a stronger emotion, which, and of course it is an emotion, I'm enough, I matter, I'm here for a reason, I've got something to offer. If you say that over and over and over again, first your mind will object, then it will go, you know what, you say this so much. You say every day, in fact, so many times, it must be true because you keep saying it, and then you let it in, which is very much the same as people who say every day, I'm stupid, I'm a loser, I'm never going to find a great guy, I'm never going to get a great job. And of course, your mind reacts entirely to the language you use. In fact, it responds to only two things: the pictures you make in your head and the words you say to yourself. So a lot of negative people make negative pictures and negative words and then wonder why they're always unhappy. But when you have positive pictures and positive words, you just feel amazing. And it's such a simple shift to make.
Well, and so I work a lot with emotions and worth, like patterns and pain and trauma and overcoming those. And so I'm curious, do we have to, what about the challenging things that happen in our life? Do we have to overcome those to feel good enough? Like what role do those play as we start to, integrate into, the truth of us, which is I am enough?
Well, you see, I find a lot of affirmations a little unusual because they say things like life's a beautiful day and the flowers are always out. And that's not true. You know, everyone in life has stresses. There's traffic, there's queues, there's weather, there's children who seem to love you so much and then treat you like you're some kind of devil and hate you. There's husbands and wives who've had a bad day and snap at you. And I think if you expect life to be perfect, you're disappointed. Whereas if you say, I have great coping skills, I love my life. Yes, I was planning a lovely picnic and it's such a shame it's raining. Or yes, I was planning a lovely weekend and I've woken up with a cold or a headache and I can't go to this function. The thing is, if you tell yourself you have great coping skills and that happiness is a choice and that you're not going anywhere called happiness, there's nowhere to go. There is no destination you can arrive at. It's the journey. And you sort of have to make a choice to love your life. And if you make a choice to love your life, to say, yep, today is not my perfect day. It's been really stressful. Everything's gone wrong. But I'm still living a great life. Then you cope with stress a lot better than goes, oh, my God, that's a nightmare. That's a disaster. That's hell. You know, I look at people standing in the store buying their groceries going, this is hell, this is a nightmare. And it's like, wow, isn't that interesting? I mean, I used to do that myself, by the way, that going into a store with money to buy groceries to eat with people that you love, we call that hell and a nightmare and torture. People go, oh, Christmas shopping is hell. Well, you know, real hell is when you have no one to Christmas shop for and no one to spend Christmas with. That's hell. People go, oh, the traffic is killing me. This commute is hell. But, you know, having a car and money to put gas in it is someone else's fantasy dream come true. And I know I sound a bit Pollyanna now, but having gone to the poorest parts of Zimbabwe and Jamaica and Cuba, you think, wow, I will never again in my life complain about having to make dinner or complain about the queue in the store or go mental because the pizza delivery guy is 15 minutes late when that's someone else's fantasy. So, you know, I have my moments of not always doing this, but I'm always aware that, gosh, my problem is someone else's dream come true. And when I was in Zimbabwe, I mean, I just couldn't believe that the stores, they have no, I went to a store to buy some food for this orphanage, for these children. And because I got a lot of very rich clients, they'd all give me money. And I went out to Zimbabwe to get sponsors for these children. And I thought, you know, I'm going to buy them some, they've never seen candy in their life and they've got nothing. So I went to the store to buy candy and I bought everything in the shop and I took it to this little orphanage. And they actually, when I tried to open a can of Coke, they ran off hysterical, didn't even know what it was. And they came back and they all took it. And I know Coke's really bad, but, you know, these kids don't have anything except mealy meal every day. And their little faces when they had lollipops and sweets and soda. So I thought, I'm going to get more. So I went back the next day and said, I've come back for more. They went, more? Well, I'm all of a twist. They're like, but you bought all our stock. I said, I know, but I want more stock. They went, well, we don't have any more stock. It will take us 2 years to get more stock because no one buys stock. Because in Zimbabwe, no one has any money. So the stock we have, no one buys it. And so I couldn't get any more. And I thought, imagine that, going to a store where there's no stock, and even if there is, you haven't got any money to buy it anyway. And then you realize how not to complain about your store having a queue or being out of your favorite brand of dishwashing powder.
Yeah, no, I think exactly like what you're getting at is it's basically there's a couple of things before we had to break here, but one thing is we always have a choice. And so it's like you have a choice as to how you show up at all times. And the second being is like when we have a roof over our head and we have food in front of us and, you know, we are in abundance. We just fail. Mm-hmm. Many times we're so conditioned not to recognize it that way that, you know, we're conditioned, oh, if I, you know, just have like some fancy car or fancy house or, you know, whatever your definition of that. When really you're living an abundant life when you have food in front of you and you have, you know, a warm place to stay and love in your life, like that's an abundant life. So we are going to take a quick break here. You are listening to Truth Talk and I am your host, Deb Acker. When we return, we are going to explore more with Marissa. So stay tuned. We will be right back.
Do you ever feel as if you're working twice as hard but only getting half as far? Are you trying to connect with your path in life and finding it elusive? Mainstream Metaphysics Radio is a weekly call-in show where we harness our connection with the universe and use what is in our power to affect change for optimal success and happiness. This hit show bridges the divide between what is and what we do not know. Eve, named one of the country's top psychics, also known as the MBA Psychic, invites you on this journey for this live call-in show with readings, featured guests, leaders, and visionaries in both business and spiritual callings. So join Eve Thursdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com as she takes metaphysics mainstream. For more information about Eve, visit EliteTarot.com. That's EliteTarot.com.
Powerful insight and practical tools to support you on your spiritual journey. Access your higher self and tune in every second and fourth Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific to A Life Untethered with Andrew Martin, Walking the Path of Freedom. Andrew is a highly attuned intuitive oracle, energy worker, spiritual teacher, and international radio host. For more about Andrew and his services, visit thelightedones.com.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit LucidPlanetRadio.com for more information.
We're We're back on Truth Talk. I'm your host, Deb Acker. My guest today is Marissa Peer, and we're talking about being enough. Before we continue, though, Marissa has a lovability exercise she wants to share with our audience. So just to share, you're going to be able to download it through the Truth Talk radio page. But Marissa, can you tell us more about that?
Well, lovability is a wonderful audio that just makes you believe that you're lovable. You listen to it in a form of hypnosis, and hypnosis is really nothing more than getting the critical factor, the critical part of your mind that screens all your thoughts, to shut down so that these thoughts go in. And it simply reminds you why you're lovable, why you've always been lovable, and starts to make you believe that you are absolutely lovable. And the beautiful thing is that when you know you're lovable, you actually can't be rejected. People can say mean things and do mean things, but when you know you are lovable, you become kind of bulletproof. Rejection doesn't go in. You know, as human beings, we're so wired to fear rejection because hundreds of years ago, when we lived in tribes, if they rejected us, we might not live. And now, of course, you know that you could live in a little studio, I mean, with six cats and live until you're 105. Because being rejected shouldn't hurt you the way it used to. It certainly doesn't threaten your life, but we still act as if it does. So what lovability does is it starts to wire you to believe that you're lovable, to feel that you're lovable, to know until it kind of comes out of your pores. Because here's the weird thing about guys. If you date a guy and you don't think you're good enough, they pick that up all the time. You know, I work with so many models who look extraordinary and go, yeah, but you know, my boyfriends leave me. It never works out because models are not secure. There's always a younger, taller, thinner model coming up right behind them. They're actually very, very insecure. And a lot of models' boyfriends get really sick of having to praise them every day and leave them for someone who's easier. And so it isn't what you look like at all. It's this knowing that you are lovable just the way you are. Because when you know that, people pick up. Here's a great example. Princess Diana was extraordinarily beautiful. I met her many times. And she had that real beauty. And yet her husband left her for someone who was older than him and not anything like Diana. But Camilla has always thought that she's utterly gorgeous. She absolutely has extraordinary self-belief. And many years ago, one of my clients said to me, oh, I've got to go to dinner with her because I won't like her, you know. I shan't like her because she stole Diana's husband. I bet you do. So I won't. Anyway, Becky came and went with the most amazing thing. So I fell in love with her in 10 minutes. There's something about her. I said, it's her self-worth because she feels so lovable. People in her company like her. She's warm. She's funny. But she's got a phenomenal, one of the highest sense of self-worth I've ever seen. And that's a really good thing to have because men like you to the degree that you like you. If you think you're sexy and gorgeous and wonderful and they never find anyone else like you, they will believe that too. But if you say, oh, one day he's going to realize I've got cellulite or I need to always keep the lights off when we have sex in case he sees that I've got a bit of a tummy or blah, 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 blah. If you start to believe that you're hiding your flaws, when he finds them, he'll be disappointed. He will. And if you believe, well, he couldn't be disappointed in me because I'm wonderful, I'm lovable and warm. Sure, I've got loads of flaws, but so does everybody. And I'm a flawed person, having a relationship with a flawed person, and I'm still good enough. Then he will believe what you believe. So for women especially, really important to know that you're lovable, to know that you're enough, to know that a designer dress and a pair of designer shoes, a designer handbag does not make you lovable. You make you lovable.
Right. I think the journey is really all about, it's like, how can you, because it's that, just exactly what you're saying, no matter what you look like, whether you look like a model or, you know, however you look, it's about integrating it into your system so that you have that self-worth, so that you have that lovability and you project that out. So it's not outward in, it's not like, okay, I've got this perfect body or, you know, whatever that looks like to you, however you define, you know, quote unquote, being perfect. It's not about that. It's about integrating it into your system and feeling it on the inside. So you project that outward and then you project people in your environment that will also show up that way.
Of course. Yeah, you have to feel it and believe it and then it kind of radiates from you. It's like, you know, children who are brought up at a very early age knowing that they are loved and lovable go to school and they make friends and they expect people to like them. And children, parents say, what are you doing? Look at you. Get that smile off your face. Who do you think you are? Don't ask for that. We can't afford it. Have a totally different belief, which is, oh, people don't really like me. You know, babies are like puppies. Puppies bad. I go, hey, here I am. I'm just the cutest puppy in the world. Don't you want to stroke me? If you kick it, eventually it will run behind the fridge and go, I'm not coming out because nobody likes me. So we are born puppies, kittens, children with a belief that I'm just lovable. Because, of course, in the womb, every need you have is met. You're connected. Someone's always there. It's always 75 degrees. You inhale and there's food on tap. So we have an interesting belief when we're born. All my needs are available to. Every need I have is met just like that. I cry, someone picks me up. I fast and someone gives me a cuddle. My mouth, they put this warm liquid in it. So, you know, we were born with a great belief, which is, that's why if you took a baby and put it in a cupboard and shut the door, it would scream for days, because its belief is, who is coming to look after me because I'm lovable? And then, of course, we start to think, oh, perhaps I'm not. So lovability is just reinstalling and rewiring and reactivating what you were born with, because there's something about the mind that you really need to understand. It does not care if what you tell it is right or wrong, good or bad, healthy or unhealthy. It doesn't even care if it's true. It lets it in. So you got to start telling it better things. So I'll give you a little experiment so you can see how your mind believes everything you tell it without question. Just put your palm right in front of your mouth as if you're about to smell something. And I want you to imagine what you're holding in your palm is half of a big, fat, juicy lemon. And as you squeeze it, you can breathe in and you can just smell that lovely, lovely lemony smell. And now you can feel that lovely lemony, waxy surface. So close your eyes and imagine you're holding half of a big, juicy, succulent, citrusy lemon in your hand. And now open your mouth and push that lemon into your mouth. Shove the whole half a lemon into your mouth and start biting it and chewing it and suck out all the juice and start to suck and chew and eat all the flesh. And you'll notice very quickly that because you think you're eating a lemon, your body doesn't disagree. It doesn't go, come on. It starts to pump out saliva to a thought. So if you can make saliva when you think about eating a lemon, then here's a proof. Every thought you think has a physical reaction in your body and an emotional response. So if you think you're not lovable, your mind and body respond to that. And if you think you're lovable, your body responds to that. If you think that you're wonderful and warm and engaging, people like you, they will. And if you think, no, I've got nothing to offer anyway, I'm fat and I'm boring and I'm not beautiful, then people pick up what you believe about you. And if you want people to like you, like yourself, if you want people to form a relationship with you, believe that you are worth being in a relationship with and that you'd rather be on your own than be with someone who isn't worth being in a relationship with, and then all of those things will happen.
Well, and so I want to ask you, because, you know, I think that this is so, like, you're talking about reprogramming, but what's the difference between this and, you know, versus positive thinking, right? Because you hear so many coaches that are saying, oh, think positively. And this, there's a difference between this. And I want to make sure that our audience understands that.
Well, you see, your mind will screen a lot of your thinking. So if you go into a shop and go and try and address, and the assistant goes, oh my God, that dress looks so beautiful in you, and oh, that color is so you, and you, wow, you look amazing. You think, I've got to buy this now, but does it really look good, or is she on a commission? Because we're never sure about the agenda of other people. Are they flattering us? Are they trying to get us to do something? Because your conscious mind is aware all the time, is this true? Is this real? I don't know if I believe this, but in hypnosis, your conscious mind shuts down and the subconscious takes over and it lets stuff in, especially if it's stuff you want to hear. That's why someone who is terrified of speaking in public but wants to can have one session of hypnotherapy, leave the stage, and do a phenomenal job. It's why someone who really wants to stop eating sugar but likes it and tries consciously to stop but just eats more and more can have one session of hypnotherapy and be indifferent to sugar. So positive thinking is good. It has a place. It's very useful, better than negative thinking every day of the week. But reprogramming the mind means it's going in at a deep unconscious level, that these new powerful words are actually replacing the old negative ones. And first it's what you do, but very, very quickly it becomes who you are and it becomes an automatic way of life. And it's a much better way of life because instead of beating yourself up, you kind of live in the moment and like who you are, just like children. You know, if you say to them, my little girl came in one day and said, Mummy, I don't think this girl at school likes me. And I said, well, she goes, well, I don't know. And I said, do you like you? She goes, oh, yes, of course I like me. And I said, well, who knows why she doesn't like you, darling, but it's not anything to do with you. They don't really understand when someone has a bad day, like when the teacher's menopausal or mum and dad have a big argument. They take it all so personally. So small children, when the parents fight, think, that's my fault. If I was nice, my parents wouldn't fight, my dad wouldn't leave. But the same children, when their parents are happy, think, well, I did that too. They're happy because they've got me. They're happy and they're singing because they've got me and I bring them joy. But then when they see the parents fighting and crying, they think, oh, that's my fault. I don't bring them joy. I bring them pain. And then we buy into this belief that, oh, I'm not enough at all. If I was enough, my dad wouldn't have left. My mum wouldn't shout. My parents wouldn't fight. And then once we do buy into that, it must be our fault. Unfortunately, we can hold on to that for years and years, sometimes our whole life.
Yeah, so we hold on to that stuff, and then, you know, obviously we take it into our everyday world and we're projecting out an experience. So, you know, as part of this, like, you know, obviously you're talking about reprogramming the mind. Talk to me about the importance of languaging, because I think our languaging is so important. And again, we're not trained to be super conscious of the things that we're putting, you know, putting out in the world.
Well, here's another rule of the mind, and they're very important things to remember. Your mind only works in the present tense, and it only responds to words that make a picture. And it loves dynamic words. I mean, people always ask me why I'm so successful as a therapist, but a lot of it is to do with the language I use and the wording I use when I'm working with clients. I would never say, oh, you feel nice now. I say, every time you say no to sugar, you are elated, you're euphoric, you're so happy, it thrills you, it empowers you, it delights you to refuse sugar, and you don't even care. You're eating it right next to you because the sight and smell and concept of sugar just intensifies your indifference to it, because that makes a very interesting picture. The mind's now picked up words, elated, delighted, thrilled, empowered, motivated, ecstatic, and it's looking for what, oh, not eating sugar makes you feel like, well, I'm just going to help you not eat sugar. And that works, but saying things like, I mustn't eat sugar, I'm not allowed to eat sugar, I'm on a diet, and if I want sugar, I've got to eat an apple, just makes you want sugar more, because we pick up words that have a meaning. So it's like saying, don't think about a black cat sitting on a purple rug on green grass, don't think about that, think of anything, but you must not think of a black cat on a purple blanket on a green grass. Well, of course, that's exactly what you think about. I said, you can think of the Swiss Alps, but you've got to think, you mustn't imagine them being orange. Don't think of them as if they've got orange snow. And now we're seeing orange snow, even though we've never seen orange snow in our entire life, because the mind responds to pictures and it responds to words that make a picture. And so when you're languaging, use words that make a picture. Let's imagine you've got your own business and you've got to spend 6 nights working on your website, sitting up till really late. You go, oh my God, that's going to be hell. It's so unfair. All my friends are out. I've got to sit in the house, bored out of my mind, and work on that website. Well, if you say that, what you'll do is end up tidying up your sock drawer and putting all your forks in the right direction, doing anything except the website because you told your mind it's boring, I don't want to do it. When you say, I love working on my website, in fact, there is nowhere else right now that I'd rather be in the whole world than sitting here on a Sunday working on this website. How lucky am I in building my own business? You know, as I write books, and writing books is very, very solitary. When I first began to write, I do that. Oh, this is really boring. Oh, I've got to be alone for the whole weekend and write when all my friends are having a great time. And then I learned to say, I love writing. It thrills me, it empowers me, it elates me, it engrosses me. And when I said that, I found myself sitting on my computer for hours and hours and hours. In fact, it really was engrossing me. And I noticed the more I said, I want it, I like it, the more it worked. And you see, if you look at masochists or extreme people who do extreme sports, they don't go, oh, I've got to run a marathon. Oh, my God, that's going to be boring. It's boring after 1 mile, let alone 24. Or, oh, I'm doing some rock climbing this weekend. Really boring. They wouldn't do it. They have to go, I love it, I want it, I've chosen. And if you look at Marines, when Marines are running, you all know what they do. They sing that song, I'm a Marine and I don't care, bring it on. And they sing through endurance and the mind goes, wow, this singing just tells me you love doing this. But if you're not used to running, you think, oh, I'm going to run because I need to lose a bit of weight. And you go, oh my God, I hate this. My knees hurt, my feet hurt. I look like an idiot, everything's jiggling all around. You'll just turn around and go home. So people who have massive success in their life speak to themselves very, very differently. They say things like, I want it, I've chosen it, I've chosen to work all weekend, I've chosen to study all weekend, I've chosen to shut myself away and run my business, I've chosen to put in the hours, to go to the gym, to live on NutriBullets for 2 weeks. I want to look a certain way. And, you know, when I work with models who succeed in eating very little, not that I'd advise that, they say things like, I'll do anything to be slim. I'd rather die than eat cake. I'll live on NutriBullets for 3 weeks because I want to look amazing when I go down the catwalk. I've chosen it. And it's very much the same thing when you look at athletes or, you know, Olympic athletes don't wake up and go, life is so unfair, I have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and train. They go, I'm going to get a gold medal. I'm going to the Olympics. I'm representing my country. If this is the price I pay, let me pay it now. And they succeed because the language patterns straight away affect you. Even saying things like, I can't remember a thing, my mind's like a sieve. It's very different to saying, it will come to me because I've got an incredible, dependable memory. But you see how you get to choose what to say all the time.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Well, and I think it's important too, like I work with vibration and energy. And it's like, if you feel the energy of choosing versus obligation or love versus hate, you know, one of them feels like feels better in your body. It feels more powerful, feels more open. When you said, like, I love writing, you could feel that the openness of that just felt really, really good. And so, you know, it's like even just noticing as we put this languaging out, how do you feel in your body as you communicate?
It's like saying I'm excited or nervous. You know, last week I finished my training course of training a whole group of people to do what I do, which is called Rapid Transformational Therapy, or RTT. And they were all very excited and they all passed their exams, they all passed their assessments and off they went. And some of them came, they've got their own Facebook group, came and went, oh my God, I saw my first client. It was amazing. It was incredible. And two of them said, oh, I've got one and I'm really nervous. And I went on and said, no, RTTers don't do nervous. We do excited and we do elated. We don't do nervous. So you have to rewrite that and say, got my first client, I'm excited. And then others came and said, yeah, well, I do that. I don't allow myself to say nervous because the brain doesn't know what the difference is. If you go to a funfair ride and see people swinging past your head on a roller coaster screaming, you would have no idea if they're terrified or elated and exhilarated because it's the same. You know, we scream when we're happy. In fact, one of my friends called me the other day, and I think I'd said to her, I've just been asked to speak from a shallow band, and she screamed, and her husband ran in the house, went, oh my God, what's wrong? And she said, oh, Marissa just told me she's speaking for a show. He said, don't scream, I was on the roof. He said, and I jumped off because I heard you scream. I thought you'd hurt yourself. I thought that was so funny that she screamed with happiness, and he leapt off and ran in the house and went, are you okay? She said, yeah, I'm screaming with happiness, but we do that. And it's interesting that the feelings are the same, the interpretation is different, but you can change the interpretation of anything at any time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like, again, it's like you get to choose in every single moment what you feel, like how you're responding to something. And it's like, you know, the definitions of fear, like feeling excited and ready, you know, all these ways we can reframe.
Yeah.
You know, reframe the way that we look at something. I know even for me, like the other day, like I actually did an exercise where I was going down, I live in a high rise, I was going down to my building to get, they have one really large washing machine, right? And that's what I do for my comforter and stuff. And every time I went down, there was someone at the washing machine. And so I asked myself, I finally said, how is this serving me? And so I just like took a deep breath. I like took my stuff up back upstairs. I like just took a deep breath. I relaxed. And then I said, oh, this is serving me because I create easy experiences. And this is not an easy experience if I continue to go down and it's all, there's so many people around and they're, you know, I'm trying to get through and just get this one machine. And so then the next time I went down, because I like chose to, you know, integrate and believe into, okay, I create easy experiences. There was no one down there. The machine was completely open. The large dryers were open. Like it was just an easy experience. And so it was such a fun way to redirect my energy as opposed to getting mad or getting, you know, frustrated, like, oh, I can't get the machine. I'm on a timeline. I need to get this done. It was such a, you know, a different experience. I want to ask you, so like, you know, we're talking about feeling lovable. We're talking about feeling good enough. You know, like what other ways can we really integrate, like loving our body, you know, having, you know, these amazing relationships and really just feeling that lovability and that good enough?
Well, you know, I do believe a lot in writing things in that. For instance, writing, I'm lovable, I'm awesome on your mirror, putting something like this girl is on fire on your ringtone so that when your phone rings, it says this girl is on fire, or that song by Sia, I'm titanium, bring it on, bring it on. I'm having the time of my life by Joe Cocker. There's so many songs, and they should be your ringtone because every time you hear them, they set off a thought process. So, you know, I was giving a talk recently to some businessmen about, you know, how you wake up in the morning, and I told them all to put that song by the Black Eyed Peas on their alarm clock. Let's get it started. And they all said, that's so weird because I used to wake up and think, oh, my God, got to get up now. And they said, when I hear it, let's get it started, I want to leap out of bed and go downstairs and blend some juice and get in the car and go to work and do a great day because I'm giving myself a different message. And so, you know, notice what the first thing is you say when you wake up. And the other thing is that, you know, you were talking earlier about externally always being disappointed. If you look for external things to make you happy, it doesn't work. But I find if I look for little things, so every time I get into bed, I go, oh my God, I love my sheets. I mean, I'm very lucky that I have lovely sheets and I get them starched. And I always buy shower gel that I absolutely love the smell of. So when I wake up, I think, oh, I can't wait to have a shower because I just love that grapefruit Jo Malone shower gel. And then I come to sit and have my first tea or coffee, and I don't just drink it. I really try to think, oh, this is so lovely. And again, it sounds very Pollyanna, but when you get immense pleasure from teeny little things like washing your hair, getting into bed in lovely sheets, putting a moisturizer on or a perfume, and you just fall in love with the smell, and having flowers, even if it's tulips in your house, and thinking, oh, I love, look at those, then what happens is you start to train yourself to get pleasure from tiny things. And then when big things come along, well, every day is like Christmas. And so one of the ways to practice self-love is to write great things about yourself all over the house, on your phone, make your passwords, stuff like, I love myself, I'm good enough, so that you say it, type it, read it. keep looking for all the pleasure you get from the tiniest thing. And then you'll notice you get pleasure all the time. And also notice how other people do weird things. Like in London, people get in the car, go, I'll never get a parking place. I'm going to the theatre, I'll never get a place to park. It's like, why would you even drive with that belief? I can go anywhere in London, right in the centre, and I always get a parking place. Because I say, everyone else thinks there isn't a place, so they don't bring their cars. And I do. There's always a place right outside the theatre. I mean, I always find a parking place. And I find it strange that you'd get drive somewhere going, I won't be able to get parked. There'd be no places. It's going to be a nightmare. I'm going to miss the beginning. I'm going to get a parking ticket, rather than believing that you'll find a space. And if you really don't think you will, take an Uber instead. But it's, again, it's that belief system. You see, if you love dogs, you'll say, oh, I love dogs, and they're so loyal, and they're your best friend. And people who don't like them go, oh, no, they get hair all over this curtain and the drapes, and they dribble, and you've got to walk them in the cold and the rain, and they smell. None of those things are true unless you believe them, and then they are. So be aware of your language and really start to praise yourself. So let's imagine, I'm going to give you an example of how to praise yourself. I want you to imagine every time you wake up, you've got an invisible roommate that lives with you, and you don't talk to you, you talk to them. And the first thing you say is, oh, your hair's terrible, doesn't suit you. And look at that skirt, it's got a stain on it, and you should have had it cleaned, and you haven't left enough time to get to work. And, oh, what an idiot, there's no milk in the fridge, and there's no healthy food. Now you're going to have to eat candy bars and get fat. And then on the way to work, they keep saying, you haven't left enough time to get there, you know, you're rushing now, and you're going to be late, you're going to mess everything up. And then when you're out, they stand over your shoulder and go, well, that's terrible. You hadn't left enough time. You could have done better. Oh, the person next to you, they're much better at their job than you are. And then you're on a date and that it doesn't work out. Saying, well, how would it work out? You've got cellulite. You've got nothing to offer. And then you come home and they say all over again, that meal you cooked was terrible. And, you know, if you had a flatmate and you spoke to them like that every day, they would be gone so fast. But we speak to ourselves all the time. I'm an idiot because I forgot to charge my phone. I'm an idiot because I didn't bring enough money to pay the parking meter. I'm a complete loser because I went out without my glasses or forgot the keys. Or, you know, you're allowed to make a mistake. Everyone's allowed to make a mistake. But you're really not allowed to beat yourself up and punish yourself.
Yeah,
so imagining how we would feel if our friends did that, then you think, I better be a friend to myself and stop.
Exactly. Can we love ourselves and treat ourselves the way we treat others? When many times we treat and talk to others better than we talk to ourselves. So actually, before we close today, I just want to make sure the listeners have the link to get your lovability exercise. And you can head to actually my website at www.deborahacker.com and just /truth-talk-radio and then /Marissa. It's just with one R and one S. So it's just MARISA-PEER. And so I just want to thank you so much, Marissa, for being part of the show today and for sharing such great information. I always love hearing from my audience with Truth Talk. So if you have a comment on the show or you'd like to introduce yourself, you can send me a note on the contact page of my website at deborahacker.com. And you can also sign up for my free Living in Your Truth guide there. And just make sure to tune in 2 weeks as I will be sharing the newest energies, learnings, and teachings. So in the meantime, I hope you have a great week and I look forward to talking with you next time.
Thank you for listening to Truth Talk Radio with your host, Deb Acker. Tune into Truth Talk Radio every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com and experience the truth of who you are and who you came here to be. Each week, Deb interviews an inspiring guest and illuminates the truth to a wide range of topics, including love, life, purpose, career, consciousness, and abundance. Welcome to the world of infinite possibilities. For more information about Deb, including how to contact or work with her, visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com. Look forward to seeing you next week for more Truth Talk Radio.